Accession number 30623, reel 3.
Accession number 30623, Mr. Terry O'Leary, reel 3. Now, we were talking about your work. Now, did you enjoy it working in the office at this ferry place?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did. I had the opportunity to walk around the factory and watch the aircraft being assembled, and because there were lots of women there working in overalls, they did most of the wiring up the main planes with the running all the wires through the wings. As I called them wings, they called them main planes, but the women used to do a lot of that, and because they were working nights and days, it was 24-hour in 3 8-hour shifts that they were working.
And you started there what, in 41? And then through to when you actually went away?
When I got called up, and that's when.
So that'd be 42. Yeah. 43 when you actually left?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was September 42 when I got called up, I actually left.
Right, okay. Yeah. Now, well, we're going to come on to that. So can I just ask you about, you know, you're a young lad. About London, about 16, 17, 18, yeah. Rising. What was entertainment in them days for a young lad, a young Londoner? I mean, what did you like doing?
Well, I'll tell you what we used to do was to go to a cinema and smoke horrible cigarettes called, that they were slightly Turkish, and we knew that the aroma would permeate the area, and people would start, and we thought it was quite
a sort of cheroot thing.
No, they were cigarettes. I can't think of the name of them, but they had a slight Turkish blend, and they were in like an American packet. You know the American Lucky Strike packets where you turn a little bit off and tap them on your finger like Humphrey Bogart. The cigarette came out. I think that's what appealed. We were trying to be, Jack the Lads, I suppose.
You'd smoked from an early... When did you start?
Oh, I smoked, certainly when I was working, when I'd started working. Because I remember I had my first cigarette the day I was 16, and my father came in, because I used to sleep. There wasn't a lot of room in our house. There were only two bedrooms, and I had two sisters, and my mother and father lived. So I slept downstairs with my brother in a room like this, and on one of these things that... went down.
Sofa settee,
as soon as I woke up in the morning, I was 16, I lit my cigarette up, and my father came in and gave me a rousting for, you may be 16, my son, but you're not big enough to smoke in this, because he was a bit, he wasn't rough, I never heard him swear, I never heard him smoke, swear, drink. He never laid a hand on me, but he only had to look at you, and you knew that you were being chastised.
Now, so what about the cinema? Was the cinema a big part of you? Because it's not in people's lives now, but it was. Was it big to you?
Oh yes, yeah, yeah. I mean, we travelled down to Acton to go to the cinema. The Shepherd's Bush Empire was another one of our haunts. Which I even carried on when I was, in the service before I went abroad.
And what was popular with you? I mean, the films you can still see them today, yeah. So we know what you're talking about. Which what type of films did you like?
Gangster films. Yeah.
So that would be the Cagney style thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Angels with Dirty Faces. I always remember that one. Was a James Cagney's early film where. Youngsters were sort of trying, I suppose, to be not conform, but in the end, they were conformed by the local priest, or that sort of thing.
Now, so cinema was big. You go often, would you?
As often as had the money, probably. Once a week or twice, once a fortnight, something like that. Yeah.
Now, what about your dad didn't drink? Did you drink? Because
I never.
So
drank.
Were you teetotal?
Yes, never drank. No.
And that was all the time through into the services.
Until I joined the service. Yeah.
So at the time you didn't drink at all. So you wouldn't go to pubs, I presume.
Oh no.
What about dance halls, dancing?
No, never went to dance halls. No.
So what else would you do?
What did we? God, it's so long ago. I'm just trying to think. We used to go down Shepherd's Bush Market. I recall going down there because my mother used to take me when I was much younger. So as you got older, and just to see what life was like down the market, and not that you were stealing or anything, because quite honestly, it never entered my head and my friend. You know, not that he were goody-goodies, but there were certain lines you knew you didn't cross, and stealing was one of them, swearing was another, again, until you joined the service.
So just a normal childhood, though. I mean, yeah. you enjoyed yourself.
Yes, yeah. It's you know.
Any big hobbies? Well, air training course for a while, yeah. But I mean, anything else?
No, I never had a hobby. I used to try and learn French songs. I learnt one, and I like to try and pick up songs. After later in life, I tried to, you know, a few more languages, but. At the time, no, it was we were just going out, walking about, you know. I bought my first shirt was I purchased was a Star Spangled, they call it, well, they did call it, which was rather ornate, I thought, but I think my mother thought it was a bit too flash, and. What else did I? An overcoat, you know, and a suit. I mean, the lads in those days were very. You had not. They weren't the teddy boys, but they were. They used to wear, have their suits made. I'm talking about the chaps who weren't in the services, who were in reserved occupation, and round out where I lived, there were, you know, not a lot, but a couple of them, and they'd have their suits made with a half belt at the back. And that always intrigued me. I thought, my God, they look smart, right, with the wide shoulders and the narrow waist. It just general things that, I don't know, a 16 or 17-year-old hoped to aspire to one day. That was.
Now, tell me about, so what's the whole background? I know there's quite a story about being called up, because it wasn't as simple as for most people. Tell me how you were called up then. It's in stages, basically, isn't it?
Well, I mean conscripted.
I mean, that's what, yeah, I mean.
All I knew that when I was 21.
Do you mean 18?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean on the 21st September when I was 18, a card came through telling me to report to the recruiting office at Horn Lane in Acton.
So that's 1942.
That was 42. September 42.
And what happened when you went there?
I was given colour charts to look at, tests. I had to do certain tests to see how your mind operated. And it was determined on that, A, which service you went into, B, which branch of the service you were going to go into, according to your background. And... they put me down as a radio telegraphist, wireless telegraphist. That was my job. What they called an OD, an ordinary telegraphist. That was the lowest rank of a telegraphist in the Royal Navy.
So that's what they were going to call you up for?
Yeah.
Based on these tests?
Yes. Yeah.
There were
like numbers hidden amongst the coloured dots, and you had to try and see if you could identify the number that was hidden within these dots. I don't know whether it was a colour.
Now, did you want the Royal Navy? Because your old man had been, your dad had been in the Royal Navy.
My father was never called up.
All right, sorry, no, that's
this,
right.
It's this your other chap who I was.
Yes, your friend. Sorry,
no, the one who I was evacuated to.
I've just slipped my memory there.
He was an ex-Navy man.
Had that influenced you at all?
I suppose it did, really.
Did you ask for the Navy, or did they just?
No, I can't recall asking. No, I think they just decided, rather like the Bevin boys, where, you know, you went where you were told.
Now, but there was a problem for you. You had the medical. Let's talk about the medical. What happened there?
Yeah, well, I went for the medical, and everything was going swimmingly, like, as they do, strip off and all of that, carry on, until I got to this doctor who saw this immense scar that I've got in my lower stomach and asked me about that. And I said, well, I had appendicitis burst, and then I got peritonitis as a result. This was it. And he asked me how long ago, and I said, well, when I was 11, which was, what, 7 years prior. And he pressed me stomach on the scar and said, oh, you've got a hernia, so we'll have to get that patched up before you can be called into the Royal Navy. So he said, what we'll do is you go away, arrange the operation, and I'll see you again in, I think it was April, and I was called up in May, 43.
Now, so the operation, but you'd left work in September as well, no?
Yeah, I had, yeah.
So what were you doing? Well, that's a long time.
Well, what happened was, at Hammersmith Hospital, my two sisters worked at Hammersmith Hospital. They worked there. That's where they worked. One of them was in the dining room for the doctors. The other one was the telephonist. I went home, told my mother what had happened. When my sister on the telephone came home, or telephonist came home, she said, I'll have a word and see if I can get you in quick to have the job done, which... fortunately, she did. So within about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, I was in having this hernia done. It wasn't, you know, I mean, it was, you're only talking about 12 days, I think, at that time for the job to be done, the hospitalisation and home. But I was told that I mustn't do any heavy work. So I thought, well, what can I do? And my sister then jumped into my help again and said, I'll get you a job in the Hammersmith Hospital, which is, of course, where she and me, our two sisters, working. So I got a job there, and I was in the office. My job was that every patient was allowed a certain amount of food. I can't recall the precise, but say 2 ounces of butter, so many ounces of cheese. And what my job was to go round, find out how many patients were in the respective wards, come back, work out the rations, which wasn't difficult, for the number of people in the ward. That went down to the stores, and the next day the stores issued that amount to the ward, who then, you know, issued it. Not butter and that to the patients, but to make the food, or for the kitchen, I suppose, for the people in the ward. And that was the office job that I got there.
How was that then? Did you enjoy that?
I didn't mind it at all, yeah, because perhaps I shouldn't say this, but there were a number of wild cats running around the hospital, and the bloke had a 2.2 rifle, and we used to shoot these... his job, I think, I don't know if it's a job legally, I suppose it was, and unofficially, he taught me how to, which I already knew how to use a 2.2 rifle, because I'd used it when I was evacuated down to Chelvey Cottages, and so we did shoot a few of these wild cats that were running around the hospital in the evenings, like, you know, when there weren't a lot of people about.
Anything else happening in this period? Any bombing that you remember, or no, is it just waiting this period?
Yeah, no, it's just waiting. I mean, I was only going to wait from the September, had the operation, to the May, and a friend of mine had already, who lived two doors away, he had already entered the Royal Navy as a submarine detector and operator, ASDIC operator, and because I just wanted to get into the uniform, and that's the... into the Navy. I just wanted to get into the Navy.
Now, you're finally called up in May 43 then.
That's
it, yeah. So where did you get sent to?
I was sent to HMS Royal Arthur, which is at Skegness, the holiday camp. Butlin's holiday camp at Skegness, which was then the training place for Navy, HMS, for His Majesty Royal Arthur.
It's a shore station, isn't it?
It is.
Now, what... What was your first, you know, when you get there, you arrive, I know you've done the air training corps, but you arrive as a civilian, and what was it like when you first got there? What were your first impressions, you know, when you walked through them gates?
Well, just how smart everybody looked in their uniforms, that was, that I found that, and because there were other forces there. There was the Free French forces stationed there, there were Norwegian Navy, there were Belgian Navy there. And so you were put into a class, so you soon got to know everybody, and they were just, you know, became good friends virtually overnight.
So were all these different foreign nationals mixed in with you?
No, they were.
Oh, no, right.
No, they were separate.
Right. Now, so what about, so when you arrive, what about kitting out and things like that? Because this is a different, you know, I mean, you've had your RAF, but this is a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
What did they give you? And the Navy uniform was quite a lot of it, isn't it?
Yes, there was the cap, there was two white fronts that you wore below your jumper. You had two jumpers, collars that some people call the dickie, but actually they were the collars that were separate. The bell-bottom trousers, the boots, and you know, obviously underwear and socks and usual.
Now, what about your accommodation? Were you in chalets? What were you
we
in?
We were in chalets. Yeah.
Now, can you describe what those chalets are like?
Yeah, because. Very much like they were when I saw pictures of, I've never been to one, but when I saw people were like, what's that holiday camp thing on television? There was a...
Heidi High, I think you mean.
And they were exactly like that. There were four to a chalet, bunk beds with a wash basin. If I recall, yeah, there was a wash basin. The urinals, toilets and that were central. And the big washing area where everybody went to wash was central, like, you know, where you all joined a line and washed together. Yeah. I can't recall much about having baths or showers, quite honestly, but I suppose we did. I can't recall that. But most of my time then was...
Now, what we do is we look at a typical day's routine, because this is your basic training, I presume, and we just spin off things like that. So how would your day start? Do you know what I mean?
Well, Reveille.
Now, what time about?
0600 hours. Straight into PT kit, come what may. Down to the big, I suppose they were tennis courts, I sort of imagine, and two PT physical training instructors, Royal Navy, and used to give you the usual 30-minute workout, like stretching and bending and running and knees up and that sort of thing.
Now, how were you with that? Because, you know, I mean, a hernia operation, I mean, I know it had only been five months before, but...
Yeah. I never gave it another thought, and no one ever asked me about it.
You were all right.
I was all right, yeah.
Never. Were you fit, do you think? Did it help your fitness, or were you fit when you got there?
Oh, no, it certainly helped and built you up, you know. You put on a bit of weight, you know. I mean,
muscle.
I was skinny, really. Put on a bit of muscle, yeah, as you say, and a bit of meat on the bones, like, yeah.
So you had this this PT session, then what?
Then breakfast.
Can I put all the food together? Yeah. What did you think of the food? Because your mum was a good cook. What did you think of their food?
Well, it was. I never gave it a thought. I was. It was edible. It was enough, and that's you know, that's all you could say. I can't recall the actual food that we ate.
You didn't have any big problem with it, is what we're really looking for. You're concerned, it was okay, and there was enough of it.
Yeah, there was enough of it, yeah.
So after you'd had your breakfast, what then?
Then, to start with, for the first few weeks, week, you went and they were explaining how the uniform was worn, how you dressed, and, of course, the wider... boys who had been in the Navy cadets were explaining how you bleached your colours because they were very dark navy blue, and what you wanted them to look like was Mediterranean blue, as though they had been under the sun. So what you did was you got some powder, bleach powder, put it in a handkerchief, and filled the bowl up, whisked this around so that you then had a solution of water and bleach, and then kept dunking your colours in until suddenly the water turned dark blue and your colours became much lighter and looked as though you'd been in the service much longer than you had. And everybody was at that, and we never got called over the coals for doing it. No one ever said, you know, that's not pucker navy gear. No one ever complained. None of the officers, no one.
Anything else you'd change in the uniform?
Illegally, yes. The V in the collar, where the black silk, you used to have a black silk, which was supposed to be reminiscent of Nelson's death, but I don't think it was. It goes back to when they used to wear like a bandolier to keep the sweat off their face. Anyway, the V was very tight. So what you did was got a razor blade, opened it up to give you more expanse of your white front, made you look a bit more old sailor type. Everybody wanted to look as though they had been had done about 4 years service when they had only been in a few weeks. And when you went ashore, as we called it, it meant liberty boat. You went out on liberty boat in the evening after, which just local, I might add, to Skegness, and but what you did was you then got some black cotton and sewed it up, hid it with a black tape. Then when you got out, because the officer would have sent you back for having too much white front showing and desecrating your uniform, so you used to take a razor blade, and once you got ashore, just nick it, and it opened up in the... what they called tiddly. That was the word that was given for all these suits. Like, after a while, you had your suit taken in, and trousers bottoms widened to give you real bell bottoms, and it made yourself tiddly, they called it. Like, you know.
They're telling you how to wear a uniform, so we go back in the, you know, typical day. So what else were you
doing? Yeah, well, you were doing, obviously, you did drill there, marching.
Now, how did you take to drill? This is your first real drill.
I loved it.
Now, what did you, so a lot of people do, what did you like about it?
Well, usually you would have the Royal Marine Band playing, and once they struck up, you... you really believe that now you are serving. And I just loved the parades and the inspections, and I wanted to be the smartest guy on parade, and I just thoroughly enjoyed.
And you had no coordination to, you know, they're penguins or whatever they call it. I think that's the army.
Well, you always got one or two. But
you didn't have any problem.
Oh, I didn't. No. I think I was born to it. I just like the ceremonial side of the parades and that. Yeah.
Now, what else? What other training sessions?
Oh, well, then
early
then,
on, you know.
Yeah. Then of course we did rifle drill.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, you had a GI, a gunnery instructor. And these chaps were a law unto themselves. They used to wear a peak cap. They were petty officers or chiefs. And a chief GI would be a chief gunnery officer. And they used to wear a chain. And it was a whistle chain round their neck. And they had a whistle. Lord alone knows what it was for. I don't. But and they used to wear gaiters, up to black gaiters, up to their knees. And look very... they were known to be really fierce, really hard men. That was the way they looked. They used to scream and shout, and, you know, but It didn't.
So how did you? Because you could shoot already, couldn't you?
But I never fired a rifle while I was in the Navy. Never fired a rifle. I did drill with them, but I never actually went on a rifle range and fired a.
They never taught you to fire the rifle.
No. I was never taught because I immediately then started to train as a telegraphist, learning the Morse code, and we used to go into a classroom.
Now, hang on. Did you do seamanship?
Not a lot. We never learnt to tie knots, but we did do boat drill. And what they had was at the back, at the bottom of Butlin's camp, there used to be like a boating lake, and they had a whaler, which is a large, about 12 or 14 men, and they were tied to the side of this lake, and the oars had holes in them so that when you actually rowed, the water, instead of the boat trying to be pulled along, the water went through the oars. They had about inch holes all around the blade of the and that's how you were learning to row in unison. And also, I always remember things stick in your mind. The Robinson's patent dropping gear that stayed in my mind, although I never used it again. And that was where lifeboats were lowered, and you struck a pin, and it was patented by a guy called Robinson, I suppose. And the pin fell away, and the boat dropped free of the.
Davits.
Yeah, the davits, yeah, that's right. And they taught you how to do that. But as far as seamanship was concerned...
So you weren't boxing the compass or doing knots and splices or anything?
My time was sent, once I went into the classroom, which we did after about a fortnight of drilling it, mainly just doing telegraphy, wireless telegraphy. And we did that in a class with about 20 of us in a class, and we each had Morse keys. And